Coming up on Golf Today, Xander Schauffele steps up to the mic in Scotland. The number three player in the world still searching for his first win since taking the Open Championship last year. What is his attitude for this week and next week where he will defend at Royal Portrush? Can Keegan Bradley handle the load at Bethpage if he is a playing captain? It's an interesting question, and Bradley tries to answer. We will hear from the U.S. Ryder Cup captain on that possibility. Also, we will head back to Woodmont for day number two of the U.S. Adaptive Open. We will show you some inspiring play and get to know some of these incredible athletes. All next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Hi there, thanks for joining us on this Tuesday edition of Golf Today. I'm Todd Lewis, proud to be sitting beside our friend and colleague Jordan Cornett. It was interesting, yesterday, Jordan, I was matched up with what is the power forward of the Golf Channel, yes, in Rich Lerner. Today I've got the full-blown big man, 6'8", Jordan, and I am Muggsy Bogues here at this table. But we're going to have a lot of fun over this next hour because there's a lot going on across the planet.
A lot going on. Really hoping with the new look in the chairs that they can support the big man, or else we might go viral in these 2 hours here in studio, Todd. So let's pray for him.
Yeah, I think we're going to be okay. We're going to talk about what some youth are doing in the game and some great opportunities for them. We're going to take you to the U.S. Adaptive Open. It's a big week on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. Is a co-sanctioned event in one of the strongest fields on the PGA Tour. I'm talking about the Genesis Scottish Open.
Yeah, and a nice tune-up for the Open at Royal Portrush, place you'll be headed to at the bottom of the week. So a lot going on there. A lot to talk about. Also excited for our Keegan Bradley conversation as it pertains to the Ryder Cup. But for right now, let's take a look at what's happening this week at the Rolex, as the Rolex series continues with the Genesis Scottish Open. The Renaissance Club is the host site in Scotland this week. Some of the game's biggest stars will tee it up with 1 week to go before the Open. You can catch live first round coverage this Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. Some notables in the field, and look, for a non-major, you won't see this many stars in a tournament for obvious reasons. A lot of them showing up as they ready themselves for the challenge that the Open presents. So they'll all be locked in at the Genesis Scottish Open. World's number one back on the big stage, Scottie Scheffler, along with some other massive names in the game, Todd.
Yeah, maybe the strongest field outside of the players on the PGA Tour. Let's flash back to 2022. That's when Xander Schauffele won the Genesis Scottish Open. Xander fired our final round, even par 70, to finish at 7-under, edging out Kurt Kitayama by a single shot. The win was his fourth in a 12-month span. Of course, we know what he did in 2024, winning the PGA Championship and also winning the Open. But 2025 has been a different story. Started the year with a rib injury that sidelined him for a couple of months. He says the rib is fine. Although his game is solid, we have not seen the Xander of last year so far. Are things trending, though, for the X-Man? Here's what he had to say in Scotland.
I'd say the belief is pretty good. I don't feel like I've given myself a lot of reasons to believe that I'm playing okay. It's been a pretty bad year, to be completely honest. So I'm definitely looking forward to. I feel like I haven't really tried to add on too many other events, and I have tried to just play to an incredible get to an incredible place with less starts, which is really hard to do these days. So I'm trying to do a lot of things, and I think the best part of my game has probably been my mental just fortitude, or whatever you want to call it, just trying to stay positive and behave as if I am playing really well. But coming off a year like last year, getting hurt and then coming back, obviously my expectations and my playing ability haven't really queued up very nicely. I wish I could have come over here and played earlier in the year, to be honest. From a mental standpoint, something about playing over here relaxes me a little bit. I definitely try to play less golf swing. It looks like with the weather this weekend, it might be a little bit of golf swing, but normally, when it's blowing 25, 30, some wind and rain comes in, it's pretty hard to think about what you're trying to do with the golf club in your swing versus just trying to keep your hands dry. So there's something to it.
Right, we'll go to Brian in the front row.
Xander, good to see you once again. By winning the Open last year, how much has that changed your life? And in terms of being an Open champion when you're going into any tournament nowadays, do you find there's more pressure on you?
I mean, I feel like for a little bit, I drank a little bit more than I normally do. That was probably the biggest change in my life that I had was, you know, I was trending towards an alcoholic. But no, it's been awesome. You know, I really don't feel like... It's been a weird year for me, just from coming off of my, you know, the year I had last year into sort of what I did, just kind of disappearing and then playing bad coming out of it. So any expectation I had of whatever I thought I was capable of doing, you know, from a feel standpoint last year has been sort of reset, and I am in full chase mode like a kid.
Well, as you can tell by that press conference, Xander Schauffele is one of the most comical. Actually, he's very, very sneaky funny.
Pretty candid.
Yeah, and generally one of the better attitudes on the PGA Tour. But you heard him talk about this. I feel like this is the root of demise on the PGA Tour for a lot of players. Max Homa is going through this, and sure. That is expectations. When you get to a bar, you expect to have that consistently, but golf is golf. Jordan Spieth went through it. Justin Thomas went through it. Ricky Fowler went through it. Like I mentioned, Max Homa is going through it. And kind of to an extent, although he has not fallen off the planet, Xander Schauffele is going through it. But I was very interested in what he said in that press conference in regards to now getting to the U.K. Because you're right. You're going to fight some wind. You're going to fight some rain. And that may force you to have freedom and be more imaginative with your shot making. And not so much worry about your golf swing, which I have seen him on the PGA Tour quite a bit going through mechanics. So we will see if this change in latitude will change his attitude, to borrow a line from Jimmy Buffett.
No question, Todd. Look, replicating success is it's an incredible challenge in golf. I mean, you look at some of the modern titans in the game. It makes you appreciate what Scottie's been able to do most recently, what Tiger was able to do during that magical run. And you can draw upon names from the past. But I go back to process, because most golfers, most athletes, most especially guys like Xander, are all about process. And that got rocked with this rib injury for the 2 months not being able to play. He talked about early on, wasn't even really able to swing a club. I know he's supposedly healthy now, but the process is still rocked. And that can be, when we talk about trust in the game and trust in your ability, you're just off kilter from the start of the season. And one thing that stuck with me and Xander sharing is he had never dealt with injury in his career. So having this for the first time, I think, is an incredible challenge for him, even as he tries to get right, having never navigated this before. But when you look at the two stats that naturally stand out in his struggles, and hopefully he can find some comfort as he goes across the Atlantic here, a place where he's won both these tournaments that we're about to see these next 2 weeks. But strokes gained off the tee, 10th last year to 115th this year. And then strokes gained putting from 12th last year to 130th.
I mean, that is shocking.
That is shocking. I asked for those stats from Kev before the show, thinking they would be somewhat drastic. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, the putting is a big thing for me. I mean, Xander, throughout his entire career, when he graduated from the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour, he has consistently been a great putter. And I think that is really frustrating him. The driver can come and go, but the putting is generally a consistent part of his game, and that is something that has...
I mean, he hasn't been in contention going into a weekend. All
no,
season.
One top 10, it was at the Masters, and he really was never in contention. We will see if that changes here this week and next week. And let's continue the discussion with a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in our buddies, GolfChannel.com senior writers Rex Hoggard, who is already in Scotland, and Ryan Lavner, who is waiting to get to Royal Portrush next week. Boys, good to see you as always. You heard Xander Schauffele. Let's start with him, his comments. How surprised are you, and I'll let you guys elaborate, that he is not playing at least close to what he was playing last year? Because if I remember correctly, all of us, we were having a discussion that Xander Schauffele, to start 2025, may be the guy to challenge Scottie Scheffler for the top spot on the planet.
I think when you look at what he's been able to do over the course of his career, and certainly last year, the expectations were through the roof. He even mentioned it today during that press conference here at Renaissance Club, the idea that he had made a comment last year that he was trying to claw up that mountain and sort of match Scottie Scheffler. He felt like he could contend week in and week out. That's not the case now. He said right now it's been a weird year, and he said he's in chase mode. And when we followed up and asked him, what are you chasing? chasing. He goes, it's not a win. I'm not looking for a win. I'm looking for something much more along the lines of just an open door, something in my game that will give me some sort of confidence going into the next week. And has it been there? It is interesting that he comes here to Lynx Golf and he feels much more comfortable. You can see a breakthrough. You pointed out a great stat, Todd. I think it is worth pointing out. He has just one top 10 all season long, but he also hasn't missed a cut. So it's very much a middle ground for him. But the one thing he says he is confident about right now is his attitude. He said, as bad as it's gotten with his game, his attitude has remained pretty good.
Lav, as we kind of discussed coming in before we welcomed you guys in, we touched upon that obvious challenge for the season with Xander is that rib injury that kept him out for 2 months. He talks about he's becoming healthy right now. He's healthy right now. And that really isn't something as a crux or excuse to make right now. But is it part of why we've seen these struggles with Xander?
Well, I certainly think that, as you mentioned, Jordan, it certainly was disruptive having that rib injury. And I go back to last year, and even though Xander Schauffele had 15 top 10 finishes, even though he won two major championships, he was talking about the work that he had done with swing coach Chris Como and still not feeling completely comfortable. Obviously, the shots were of a very high standard, or he wouldn't have won those two tournaments that he did. But he still wasn't quite comfortable with some of the swing changes he was trying to do and betting them in. Then you have essentially a 2 month disruption when he should be working hard on his game, trying to get ready for the major championship season. And he was completely on the couch during that stretch. And so it's certainly been a little bit of a give and take with he and Chris Como trying to get his golf swing in a better spot. Now, that's obviously no excuse for why he has fallen back with some of his scrambling numbers. It's certainly no excuse for why he's fallen back with his putting, but he is just missing too many fairways off the tee right now to give himself a really credible chance to get into contention.
All right, so look, I'm not ready to break the glass and pull the emergency lever that he is going to have a lost season. I mean, he's still got a great chance over the next few weeks and in the FedEx Cup playoffs to really make up some ground. But he's going to be on the Ryder Cup team for the United States. There's no doubt about that, Rex. And there has been that discussion since Keegan Bradley won the Travelers. Should he be a playing captain? Did Xander get asked that today? And if so, what are his thoughts?
He did, and it was interesting. He referred to it as a fun situation, quote unquote, if Keegan found himself in a situation where he was going to be both a player and a captain. And he actually touched on something. I think we talked about this yesterday, Todd, and certainly Lav and I have talked about it on the podcast, that if this is going to happen, and you feel like at this point in time, he's among the top 12 players, and Americans in the world, you would expect him to be on that team. Xander said as much that, yes, he should be on that team. And he suggested maybe some sort of co-captaincy where he gives himself an opportunity to captain overnight, but then he hands the duties off to one of his vice captains during the day when he's having to focus on his game. He didn't see it as a problem at all, but Xander did point out something again that we've touched on, that if you're going to do that, you probably need to start getting in the weeds right now. You need to get into the logistics and exactly how this is going to work, that Keegan is going to take over as soon as he walks off the golf course, but whoever, probably Jim Furyk, is going to have the keys fully when Keegan is on the course having to focus on his game.
So, Lav, here's my question, because, of course, we know what, 1963, Arnold Palmer was able to do this as a player and a captain looking back. We made reference to Tiger Woods in the President's Cup, which is obviously not the Ryder Cup, but him wearing both hats. But we're talking about a guy in Keegan Bradley who is a heck of a player. But he's not at the level of those two names that we're using there, Lav. And also the fact that he was kind of a surprise pick for this, not saying he's not built for it, but to have to juggle both of these, does it feel like a disadvantage for the Americans if they do elect to, or he does elect to be a captain and a player as well for the Ryder Cup at Bethpage?
Yeah, I think it's potentially a disadvantage for the Americans, an advantage for the Europeans, however you sort of want to pose that sort of argument. And I would certainly exercise patience, Jordan, when it comes to this, because Keegan Bradley, as you mentioned, he's ninth in points. It's not like he's a lock to get inside the top six and become an automatic pick if he potentially does not play well over the next 4 to 5 significant tournaments that remain on the PGA Tour before he and his vice captains are going to have to make the captain's picks for this U.S. team. It's conceivable, certainly, that he could slide further down that rankings. And so then you're making a judgment whether Keegan Bradley, who might be, let's say, hypothetically 11th or 12th in the standings, up against a Harris English or an Andrew Novak or a Jordan Spieth, players of that ilk. You are going to be essentially taking a part-time player in Keegan Bradley, because if he does fulfill sort of the playing captain obligations, you would think reasonably he would not play more than 3 matches overall, most likely in the afternoon so he can sort of see how the morning plays out. So do you really want a part-time player as one of those 12, or do you want to have 12 full-time players, players who are fully committed to being a player, and let Keegan Bradley be the captain? We still have a month and a half to go before he has to make this decision. So I would exercise patience, and who knows, if his play slips, I think it potentially becomes even more problematic. And obviously, if he plays well and gets in as a top six qualifier, he's done himself a great service, and he obviously warrants consideration and should be on that U.S. Ryder Cup team.
It's interesting. With all this conversation, it is becoming somewhat of a borderline distraction as we move closer and closer to Bethpage. But let's talk about this week. Rex, want to get to the Genesis Scottish Open. As I mentioned, a very, very strong field here. It may be the strongest field outside the players on the PGA Tour. Why has this week become such a popular stop for not only the PGA Tour, but for DP World Tour players? And secondly, to follow up, how much does the Scottish Open prepare players for the Open at Portrush next week?
Yeah, Todd, I think it's twofold on this front. First, you look at the history since the Scottish Open became co-sanctioned by the PGA Tour 3 years ago. You look at the list of winners. You just mentioned it. You have Xander Schauffele, you have Rory McIlroy, and you have Bobby McIntyre. All three really neat winners that all came with cool stories. You also had a lot of drama coming down the stretch. Look what Rory did against Bobby McIntyre 2 years ago. They put a plaque on the 18th hole. You usually have to do something really cool to get a plaque put on a hole. So you get an idea of how much drama and how much this is of interest to players. And then the second part is what you touched on. I don't think there is a better tournament to prepare someone for a major championship than this week. Now, the Renaissance Club is not a true links course. At least that's what my Scottish friends will tell me, that you don't exactly get the full feel of it, but you get the feel of the turf, you get the feel of the conditions, you get to understand how the ball is going to be affected by the wind. You're probably going to deal with a little bit of rain along the way. All of those things are going to help guys get acclimated and just go down the list. We have seen it over the last 3 years. If you played well here at the Scottish Open, more times than not, you ended up playing well the next week at the Open Championship.
Lav, looking back to last year as a two-horse race for PGA Tour Player of the Year, it was Scotty and it was Xander who you take, and it was a tough toss-up. Eventually, it went Scotty's way. Then you look at this year, feels like a two-horse race with Scotty and Rory as we stand here right now. Both guys in the field for the Scottish Open, shortest odds for both that and the Open the following week. As we stand here right now, Lav, and I ask you, who's the PGA Tour Player of the Year?
Wow, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is fully a toss-up. And I do think, not to be a cop-out here, I do think that the remaining month and a half of the PGA Tour season is going to determine it, because the I would say that the resumes are going to be very, very close when you look at those two players. I think right now I would probably give the edge to Rory McIlroy slightly, just because of the Players' Championship. And I think because, keep in mind, with the PGA Tour Player of the Year, that's also voted on by his PGA Tour peers. And I think the historic nature of Rory completing the career Grand Slam is going to hold a lot of sway with his peers. That was the best 4 months of Rory McIlroy's PGA Tour career. I think right now, if I had to pick, and of course I don't, because the season doesn't end for a month and a half, if I had to pick right now, I would take Rory just slightly.
Todd, you know Ryan Lavner. No one sits on a fence better than him. Yeah. Make him answer the question. I'm going to come back and say I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with Scotty Scheffler. He's been more consistent over the course of the season. I see where Lav is coming from, the historic value of what happened at the Masters. There is still some time. We have the playoffs and obviously next week at the Open Championship. But Lav, make a decision, man.
I did, Rory, just slightly.
Yeah. Well, okay. All right. So here's a question for you, Rex. You won't touch haggis in Scotland. Black pudding, will you touch that?
No, I will say, and I didn't want to say this yesterday, we did have fried haggis a couple of days ago in Edinburgh, and that wasn't bad. I will say that.
Well, yeah, you fry anything, it's pretty good. I mean, I didn't know they had fried haggis. So hey, way to go, Rex. You're a little adventurous with your taste buds.
So adventurous.
Yeah, there you go.
Guys, I love it. Rex and Lav, we appreciate the time, guys.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Todd, you know this body's no accident. I'll try any of it. Still ahead on Golf Today, a truly special week in golf as the fourth edition of the U.S. Adaptive Open rolls along in Maryland at Woodmont Country Club. The best golfers in the world competing in a different impairment categories have a chance at a national championship this week. Highlights, they're on the way on the other side.
Andy Stevenson is our man on the grounds at the U.S. Adaptive Open, and he has more on some of the storylines happening there.
Thanks very much. I've got a really nice story for you from the US Adaptive Open. Now, this is John and Dennis from Sand Creek Station in Kansas. And you may remember last year's tournament, last year's Adaptive Open was at Sand Creek, and these two volunteered 12 months ago, and they loved the experience so much. You're back here at Woodmont. You've traveled all the way across.
We have, yeah.
Yes.
And what was it about this tournament that made you go, do you know what, I want to be involved in this again?
The players.
Absolutely. The inspiration of the players. Gets me right here.
Does it?
Get kind of choked up about it, but, you know, it's wonderful that all the players have overcome all these challenges, and to be able to do what they do, it's inspirational.
And, John, what jobs were you doing last year at Sand Creek, and now what are you doing here this year at Woodmont?
I was basically in charge of four caddies. It ended up being kind of in charge of the majority of the volunteers, just making sure everybody got to where they were supposed to be and that sort of thing. We had several people that were volunteer captains, as Dennis was and I was. But all of us have been associated with Sand Creek Station for so long, we kind of knew where everything was and what to do, so everybody just kind of jumped in and took over and did things as needed, whatever we needed. But I was standing out there on the course, the clubhouse, and directing volunteers to go this way and that way, and had a little bit of help from Kathy, who's from South Carolina, I believe she said. Yesterday we talked to her again. But she had been at Pinehurst, and she volunteered because she was inspired. So she came all the way to Kansas to do it, and she jumped up one day and said, John, can you use some help? And I said, sure. And so she took over for me, and it was fun. But I'm like Dennis, just so inspired with these individuals. Not only can they play great golf, which is humbling for us because we're older and we're in the senior league, and when you see some young lady with one arm that drives the ball 265 yards straight down the middle, I can't do that with two arms and two legs. And they're just so positive about life. And after being around them all week, you can't get up, you can't go to bed and get up the next morning and feel sorry for yourself. It's impossible.
And Dennis, when we look back 12 months ago at Sand Creek, did it make a difference to the club and the members there having had that tournament? You know, when the tournament went away, did it feel like actually, wow, we had something really good there and it's made some changes?
It was amazing for our golf course. We got a lot of recognition, but also we had a tremendous amount of support from people coming to volunteer like John and I. And it was just, you know, it was just wonderful to see all the people that help support this wonderful golf tournament.
And the two courses are very different, both as fantastic as each other. But what did you think when you first stepped onto Woodmont here the other day?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Very impressive.
It was wow.
Very impressive.
A beautiful facility. Absolutely gorgeous grounds. All the amenities that they have here is absolutely fantastic.
And the temperatures, John, I mean, obviously, Kansas, it's pretty hot, but it's a dry heat, and we're struggling in the humidity here, aren't we?
A little bit dry. We have humidity, but not quite like this. So when we got up, Dennis, one of the first things he said when we both got our coffee at the hotel and we're leaving, he said, I checked the weather app, and it's only 95% humidity.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my goodness, it's like Florida. But I wanted to say something, too, that Dennis addressed with our club. We're a local golf course. I mean, so we had all of our good majority of our volunteers were just community that stepped up and volunteered. We don't have club members or anything. We're not a clubhouse. The community in Newton really stepped up and welcomed this tournament, and everything we heard from all of the players, the caddies, the parents, they were just so impressed with how nice the community was. And they, even though we're not a country club, they really enjoyed our golf course and enjoyed being there because of how they were treated. And that's what, you know, life's all about.
Well, listen, it's fantastic that you were there last year and have come here this year. I'm sure you'll be back at Woodmont next year and maybe Oregon in a couple of years' time.
Oregon, but hopefully.
It's brilliant that this championship has had such an effect on Not just you, but so many of the volunteers out there. And thank you very much for what you're doing this
Absolutely.
Week. Thank you. Nice to see you.
Now, Dylan Au is an alumnus of the First Tee of Greater Seattle. He joined the First Tee at the age of 7. He was inspired by his dad to play golf. Now, Dylan became a member of the Junior Advisory Board of the First Tee of Greater Seattle, helping to raise more than $40,000 for the chapter. And Dylan joins us now from the state of Washington. And Dylan, first, thanks for joining us. And I know you had a wonderful experience last year for a couple of reasons. A, you're playing Pebble Beach in a prestigious tournament that honors the First Tee, but also you're playing alongside Seattle native Freddie Couples. How would you describe the moments walking the fairways with Freddie?
Oh, man, it's unreal. Like, everyone's heard of Mr. Couples around here. And when I first got the notification that I would be playing with Mr. Couples, I just went ecstatic. So when I was actually playing the event, I was just more in shock and awe. And it was just like a just surreal experience. I'm walking the fairway with Freddie Couples. So just a surreal experience.
You know, Dylan, anytime I have the opportunity to play with anybody who's just a tick better than me in golf, I try to soak them up like a sponge, try and get as much information from them as possible. I haven't played with a guy like Freddie Couples before. What did you use it as a lesson? Did you pepper him with questions? What was your biggest takeaway from that time with a guy that not a lot of people get to brush shoulders with, let alone in a round of golf?
Well, when I'm playing with anyone better than me or just anyone better at all, I love just like just seeing if I could take a part or just if there's anything I can learn from them. And from Freddie, that's exactly the case. As junior golfers, we're always told to pick up the pace. We're always walking to our next ball, play ready golf. But really, when I was playing with Freddie and just in this big prestigious tournament, it felt slower. We actually took our turns, and it was just a great experience. It, slowing down, and especially at a course like Pebble or Spyglass, we just really got to take in those views and just appreciate the game of golf.
You know, during the tournament, each pro junior is paired with a pro, I should say, and it's also a couple of amateurs play alongside, and you left quite an impression on one of those amateurs. Sam Reeves, a longtime friend of Freddie and a legend in the golf world, hooked you up with a tee time at Cypress Point, which is one of the most enviable tee times you can have on the planet. And I understand you got to play Cypress. Who did you take with you for that wonderful experience?
I just took a couple of First Tee coaches that have been a longtime mentor to me and just really important to me, especially because First Tee was directly responsible for sending me down to Pier, and it was just my way of thanking them for my journey and getting to appreciate a beautiful course.
Dylan, you've been involved with the First Tee Greater Seattle since you were 7 years old. You're now 18, so that's over a decade being tied to this organization and experiencing all the great it provides. What's kept you coming back to the organization?
The organization is a great organization. It really helps me give back to the golf community and the community that I was growing up in. And I was able to just make such great connections with the coaches and players. And I for sure have a long lifetime friends through this organization. And just being able to make this impact has been great for me.
Todd, 18 years old. It's a long time ago for us.
Yeah.
Dylan, as you think about being 18 and so much in front of you, what are your plans for the future?
I'm planning on attending the University of Washington this fall, studying a pre-medicine route. So I'm looking towards medicine in the future, maybe towards sports psychiatry, especially with how mental this the game of golf is and how important it is to me.
Well, that is fantastic because you're the perfect person I need to ask
segue.
This question to. Today is the 15-year anniversary of LeBron James saying, I'm taking my talents to South
Beach.
The decision. I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Today, I would like to announce that I am taking my lack of talent to Pebble Beach. I'm actually going to be playing in the Pure, and I'm so much horrifically looking forward to this because my game will be on public display. Can I get your advice, Dylan, on my mental and emotional approach to playing in this wonderful event?
Dylan, put on that sports psychology hat, I think, is what he's asking you to do here.
Of course, yeah. What's on your mind?
I'm nervous. I'm very comfortable holding a microphone in front of Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy talking about the world's greatest players, but I'm pretty uncomfortable playing golf while many others are watching. So help me out here.
Well, I think when I was playing, I didn't really focus on the crowd. I just focused on the fact that I'm playing Pebble Beach and I'm playing it with a tour pro, especially Freddie Couples. And I was just getting to know them, getting to know the amateurs, Mr. Reeves, Ansley. It was just a great experience to just connect with these people that I've never met before, especially on a course like this. So I think you just got to let the crowd fade and you're just focused and you're playing the game of golf. And that's the best part of it.
Boom, there you go.
Dylan, make sure you send that invoice to the NBC studios for Todd. We'll get you paid promptly for that one. And make sure you take a lot of videos of our guy, TV's Todd Lewis, and that golf swing out there. Look forward to the event. Best of luck, and thank you so much. Best of luck in the future. It sounds like a very bright one for you as well, Dylan.
Great. Thank you so much. Have fun. You're going to enjoy it. Trust me.
Rocking along. Still ahead in hour number two of golf today. Start of the Ryder Cup, inches closer to late September. We asked the question, is Captain Keegan Bradley, fresh off the signature win, one of the best options to put himself in the U.S. lineup? We'll hear from the captain. And we're highlighting a special event this week as the U.S. Adaptive Open is underway in Maryland. We'll have highlights from some of the best golfers competing in different impairment categories for a national championship.
Golf today.
Welcome into the Golf Channel studios. TV's Todd Lewis, Jordan Cornette, rocking along for hour number two. We got a good second hour ahead here, Todd.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Keegan Bradley. You know, it's interesting. Keegan is not playing in the Genesis Scottish Open this week. He will be at Royal Port Rush, trying to win yet another major championship. He's got a lot going on, especially today down in South Florida where he lives. One of his two sons competing in the Drive, Chip, and Putt local chapter there. So it's not like he's got a lot of stress on his plate as a Ryder Cup captain, as an elite player trying to win a major championship. Now he's got to get his son ready to possibly get to Augusta National. So, Keegan, hang in there, buddy. There's a lot going on.
Guy seems to always be busy and certainly on the mind as a topic of conversation, and for good reason. In July of last year, and what many saw as a surprising move, the PGA of America named Keegan Bradley as captain of the U.S. Ryder Cup team for this year's competition at Bethpage Black. Keegan previously competed in the 2012 Ryder Cup at Medina and again in 2014 at Glen Eagles. Just a few weeks ago, the captain rallied from three shots behind with four holes to play to beat Tommy Fleetwood and win the Travelers. The win was Keegan's first in his signature event and only strengthened the case, you see him fired up there, for him to bring his clubs to Bethpage Black in September against the Europeans.
Now that win vaulted Keegan to ninth in the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. A reminder, the top six players in points after the BMW Championship earn automatic spots, with the captain making six more selections. Scottie Scheffler is automatically locked on that team already by points. But Keegan Bradley is the story. And earlier today, Keegan joined Gary Williams on Five Clubs.
The other thing which you internalize and then you shared recently, you mentioned the Travelers, you went in it again. You said that he also said he wanted you to be a playing captain. Why did you think it was important for you to internalize that, not share that at any point until now?
Yeah, I didn't even think much of it when I said it. I wasn't trying to keep that quiet. I just never said it for some reason. I probably shouldn't have. I see it's made a bit of some news, but you know, I think it was important for them to, because part of it was a little bit, I was like, wait a second here, I'm still trying to play. I'm still in what I think of the prime of my career. I'm not trying to, you know, normally this role is for someone who's done playing, their family's much older, and I think they wanted to get across to me that, like, you know, they still wanted me to be a player, and that was important to hear. You know, my goal is always to make a Ryder Cup team every year that they play, or President's Cup team. And so that there's no difference here when I start this year, as I want to play on this team. And it's just a very unique situation that I'm in.
It is. It is just that. And one of the other things, Keegan, that you said at the outset was that you were not going to pick yourself. And I totally got it by you saying that. There's no reason for you to say, well, man, you know, there's a chance I might pick myself. You can't say that either. And I've always believed that things change. Things have changed. You are not in the top six, but you are as good as anybody in terms of, you look at your team, Scheffler's in a category by himself. So now it seems unlikely that you wouldn't pick yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, so when I started this whole process, you know, I was on my own here. Like, I didn't have any of my vice captains. I was just into this role. I had just learned that I was captain. And then I had Webb come on, and it felt a little better. It felt like more manageable. Then I had Sneds come on, and I was like, okay, now this feels great. I got a team starting. And then Kisner, and then Jim, and Jim's been spectacular just because of his experience and what he brings. And then Gary Woodland. And then now I have this team of five. You know, as before, I was on my own, and it just, everything seems a lot more manageable. They all bring such a different perspective and different attitude towards this, and I feel like they complement each other in a great way.
The answer, not answer there from Keegan Bradley, and he's in a tough spot. Let me just say this. It was actually 1 year ago today that the official announcement came out from the PGA of America that Keegan Bradley was going to lead the United States at the Ryder Cup. It was a shock. It was very much a shock because he was completely off the grid. Hadn't been in a U.S. Ryder Cup team room since 2014. Yeah. That's why it was surprising.
Everybody saw
to me.
The moment from Full Swing when
right.
And he so was left off that group.
And he's an elite player. He really is. You're going to have to work very hard to convince me that he is not one of the top 12 United States players.
So what do you do?
It's a great question. It is going to have to be really well orchestrated if indeed he is a playing captain. Because if you put him on that team, none of the other 11 players will be setting lineups, having meetings with his vice captains, speaking at the opening ceremony, giving a motivational speech, trying to rev up the crowd as much as he can as someone who is from New England and is so close with Bethpage. So it will take a lot out of him mentally and emotionally. Now, the question is, will it take so much out of him that he can't be the strongest player that he can be? So I don't know how they're going to be able to do it. I'm not saying they can't do it, but it's not going to be easy. It's going to be a challenge.
Todd, here's my biggest concern as we steady ourselves for what seems like the inevitable. He's going to be forced to make this decision with how well he's playing. There's such a certainty because of how great he's playing, his familiarity with that St. John's background and the course there at Bethpage Black. What if he elects to play and he struggles as a player? Nobody seemed to talk about that yet. When we talk about how this is a distraction somewhat right now, does it metastasize as such a distraction then if he struggles as a player? Because then we're in there and he goes, oh, he's a captain and a player, and he's not playing well. Oh, now has it become this domino effect of, is he a captain in an effective way? And I just think if you can avoid that potential situation, you avoid it, no matter how well he's playing. It feels like to me, and I know the fiery competitor that Keegan is, he wants to do both. It feels like you're flirting with danger if he wears both hats.
Yes, absolutely, you could. I am not saying that Keegan Bradley can't handle it. I'm just saying it's going to be incredibly challenging. He's going to have to play at least one session. He's going to have to play singles on Sunday, so that's a guarantee. I will say, if you watch that interview, Gary Williams did a really nice job with Keegan there and asking him the proper questions. And Keegan did say at the end of that interview that he is actually hoping that somebody over the next 2 or 3 months comes in and has a run, one or two players, and kind of makes the decision for him and puts themselves in a position where they have to be picked. Keegan has said that if he's going to talk to the six qualifiers after the BMW Championship, and if they feel strongly enough that he should be on that team, it's going to weigh heavily in his decision as to making him a part of the U.S. team as a player.
I also wonder if they put his feet to the fire and he has to choose one, which would he rather be? Would he rather be the captain or would he rather be the player? Mm-hmm. I'll also straddle the fence here and say this, knowing how the high level he's playing at, his familiarity with the course, that passion in which he plays with, fueling this team, there's part of me that would say, I'd love to see it, because it does also create an advantage if he goes out there, plays great golf, and he's a captain, and it fires up the other 11 guys on the team, and they feel like, it's our guy. We're doing something we haven't seen since 63. Let's go get it.
Yeah, well, if you had to choose, which is he a better weapon as a captain or a player, I'd say right now he's a player.
For sure.
Jim Furyk is going to be a key component on that.
That's also a big part of it, the support
key
staff.
Key component in that team room for the United States team. All right, we're going to shift our attention to the Korn Ferry Tour. Last month, Austin Smotherman won the BMW Charity Pro-Am with a final round 67. The win was his second career victory on the Korn Ferry Tour. Austin won by three shots, finishing with three birdies in his final five holes. How about that? And then just a few weeks later, Austin followed that victory up with another one. He fired a final round 8 under 63 to win the Memorial Health Championship by one shot over 54-hole leader Alvaro Ortiz. And with that win, Austin moved to the top spot in the Korn Ferry Tour points list.
Well, take a look at the season in review. There's a reason why Austin Smotherman is all smiles right there. 16 starts, the two wins coming in the month of June. A handful of top 10s, a bunch of top 25s, and consistently making cuts. Austin Smotherman playing high-level golf. Austin, very excited to have you, and we absolutely want to talk about your golf game. But before we do that, we wanted to touch on the tragic floods in Texas, a state that you've called home since 2012. I know you and a few other Korn Ferry Tour players are donating to the relief efforts. Is there anything you'd like to elaborate on for those watching and listening right now?
Just how much our hearts go out to everybody affected down there in Kerr County. I can't imagine the pain that's been felt and the amount of community involvement to get everybody rescued and just working on these efforts. And I know that a little thing that we can do on our player side as far as being part of the Korn Ferry and PGA Tour, I mean, our efforts amongst the community as far as doing everything we can charity-wise and make an impact is what we want to do. And if we can do that for those affected down there, that's our goal.
Yeah, that's great, Austin. Your heart's and your head's in the right place along with the rest of the Korn Ferry Tour. Austin, you spent quite a bit of time on the PGA Tour, 22 through 24. You just missed out on keeping your card. You went back to the Korn Ferry Tour. I would like for you to give me kind of the attitude you had starting the year on the Korn Ferry Tour as you tried to get back to the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I think having graduated even from an earlier start on PGA Tour Latin America, now PGA Tour Americas, you know, being able to grow my game to the PGA Tour level and seeing myself, you know, stay out there for the couple of years I was there is definitely a confidence boost to where coming down to the Korn Ferry, I knew that I belonged on the PGA Tour and just to have that self-assurance and that belief in what I was doing that got me out there is going to get me back and just kind of just falling into our roots, falling into our good habits and letting go Thursday through Sunday, being able to play this golf that we've been playing. I mean, really since January, it's been a nice start to the season and we've capped it off with a couple wins here in the midpoint and looking for that next one.
Austin, let's talk about those couple wins. June has been was a month to remember, certainly two wins in a 3-week span. With your game, what do you feel like you captured in that time for you to go from here to really soaring to great heights?
I think it was just these continued conversations with my whole team, just to go out into the golf course and be able to just ask myself, you know, how good and how committed can we hit these golf shots? Just no shying away from the moment. And I think that's what I've had to kind of accept and grow in, is that sometimes you got to hit shots that are uncomfortable and you got to be able to figure out how best to get yourself in that frame of mind to be able to do that. And the Korn Ferry has been that platform for me to get in this point that I want to launch this season. I mean, I wish I was playing on the PGA Tour right now to go, you know, be shooting these scores and go test my game against the best players in the world. But to be out here on the Korn Ferry and still have the success while I still feel like I'm growing and still have some to learn as a player is kind of a cool spot to be. And we still got tournaments left until we get back to the PGA Tour next year, having kind of locked up our card now and looking for that Battlefield promotion.
Yeah, all right, let's tap into what you're talking about there. And I know belief is the most precious commodity in the game of golf, but especially on the stage that you're on. You're speeding on the highway to making it back to the PGA Tour. If you get membership on the PGA Tour, do you feel like you'll be a different player than the prior years that you were on the PGA Tour? And if so, how?
I think it's just an evolved version of myself. I think my game's always kind of been suited for the PGA Tour as far as ball striking goes and being, in my mind, a top driver of the golf ball. which I'm excited to do at this course behind me at TPC Colorado this week, being at a little bit of elevation. But I think getting back to the PGA Tour is going to be a Austin Smotherman golf season and player that is a little bit more refined, a little bit more efficient in his time, able to take what I've learned, being the trust and belief and the conversations, how I converse with my caddy Zach on and off the golf course, and our prep and plan to be ready Thursday through Sunday. And I've had the success where I've seen that recipe kind of come to fruition this year already, now twice, and other good weeks that could have been other wins here and there, and just trying to soak it all in and get back to the PGA Tour ready to go.
Austin, the sport of golf is such a grinding sport in terms of the journey, the ups and downs that come with it, and just getting back to the tour and what that would mean. I ask you, what would it mean to you to be able to get back that tour card and get back playing on that PGA Tour? What would that mean to you?
I mean, as means everything. I mean, it's a lifelong childhood dream of mine to be out there playing on the PGA Tour and to have done it and had that success and been there for a couple of years, not just for me, but for my family, and having the opportunity to bring my two young little girls on the road a little bit more frequently and, develop their relationships as they grow. And I've a good friend, being Aaron Baddeley, who I've played a number of times with over the last few years as a pro, seeing him and his six kids on the road, and they've grown up in tour school and they know everybody left and right from all over the world, basically. And it's kind of a cool avenue that I kind of picture my girls having and, making friends, lifelong friends out there.
Yeah, it would be great to see you back out on the PGA Tour, Austin. We do have a very special person in your life that we'd like to help join the conversation with some special news.
Hey, how you doing, mister?
What are you doing?
Well, I don't know. They drugged me into this.
I guess so. You called me last night. I missed your call. I'm sorry about that.
Yes, I wonder why you didn't call. You're right.
By the way, that's Austin's grandfather. Go ahead, sir. Do you have some news for us?
Oh, you got some big news?
Well, what am I going to tell it? You're going to have to go back to the tour.
You got your card. Is that right?
Get your card again. You're going to get another card, and we can use a little card.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, that means all too that we can all go all the western states, Napa.
Yeah, you guys are going to come out to the whole west coast swing, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Right.
You better get those walking shoes ready, Bosch.
Right. Let's polish up them tennis shoes.
no more keyboard pounding over there to refresh the PGA Tour app, huh?
Especially you don't know how many yards you're away or how far you are or how close the putt is.
Oh, tour cast or anybody that needs to figure out how to run the PGA Tour app or online version needs to go through my grandpa. I think he'll give you a quick deep dive in that.
I don't want to get into about the schedule or anything now.
well, for those who are watching at home, we brought your grandfather in, Austin. You probably had figured this out because of your great play this year, but you are officially now going to be a part of the PGA Tour with your great play so far this season.
Thank you.
And so that's what we are celebrating. It'd be awesome to have a family member tell you officially. So welcome back to
Very
the tour.
Cool.
It is well-deserved, well-earned.
Thank
Very
you guys.
Good.
Oh
good.
Gosh.
Nothing but
feels good. Now we still got a tournament to play. I know he'll be watching closely.
Be in that
Thank
top
you guys.
Five. We don't want to get down any lower than that.
Oh, you hear Grandpa gives you the announcement. Now he has expectations. They come that quickly, Austin. That's how it happens. Austin,
go ahead. I love it. Go ahead. No, after you.
We wanted to have your grandfather on here because after that BMW charity pro-am win, your family's emotional reaction and how important your girls are to you, your mother, your grandfather, everybody being around your family. What does it mean to have your grandfather taking over the airwaves here on Golf Channel, making this sort of announcement and having, again, your family involved in such an important moment?
It's so cool. It's chills on my end to hear it. I mean, not necessarily shaken, but excited. And I just put myself in his shoes, and that's what makes me so emotional right now is thinking, how many shots he's watched me play, Bosch over at De La Viega or who knows what, walking with his men's league during the summertime and whatnot. I mean, he'd wake me up at 6 o'clock with a PB&J and a bag of trail mix that we're going to the course. Yeah. And I'd be like, Bosch, I just want to sleep. It's summertime. And I'm like, he's like, no, we got the first group off the box. We're pushing our push carts around. We're ready to go. And
Right. Your grandma made a sandwich so that you can be ready for a break.
She made sure I was fed and ready to go. And then, but I can't imagine him. I mean, Bosch, I mean, how do you feel getting to share this news to me after, you know, seeing my whole golf career come to this?
Yeah. Yes.
Hey, Pops, we'll ask
you. I get to go too.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you out on tour as well. Pops, what is this?
I did it once before in Corn Ferry. The guy was all over me.
I want to get your reaction to see your grandson after being out on the tour for a while, go back to the Corn Ferry tour and show tremendous determination, perseverance, and growth that he has talked about to get himself back on the PGA Tour fairly quickly. How much pride do you have?
Oh, gosh, you know, when I first thought about it, you know, they cut back all the quantities that guys get their cards, but and then you play and you get all these points and everything. I said, to get back in that top 20, you almost have to win to get enough points. I mean, you're going to have to be up there like he is now to get in there. Otherwise, you know, if you finish 20th and 25th or all this year and everything, you're not going to make it. So he come through with those two wins. That just put him over the top. Makes it all worth it.
Well, I got to say, this has been the highlight of the show, no question. A family affair. Grandpa, thanks for doing your part here, making the important announcement. Austin, congratulations to you. Well deserved. I think it's fair to say, Todd, unlimited PB&Js may be here moving forward.
That's been missing for Austin. Yeah, that's
we will have
them. We got a few of those.
We're staying in a house in Boise in a couple weeks for the Albertsons Boise Open out there, and I'm sure that fridge will be plenty stocked, and he'll have his little string bag ready to go with whatever snacks we need out there. So,
what a cool moment!
Saving my energy to walk 4 days.
Yeah, well, awesome. You'll find that energy, Grandpa. No, congratulations to you guys. Soak this one up. We'll let you get off the airwaves and collectively talk as a family. Thanks again.
Thank you guys so much. Okay. Great news.
Nice talking to you guys.
You too.
I got to figure out if my cheeks are going to calm down today after smiling so hard. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Love you, Bosch.
So long.
Bye.
Talk to you later, Oz.
I mean, how fun was that? And when Golf Today returns, we're going to be joined by a player making her pro debut this week, Maribel Ting, at one of the most decorated amateur careers at Florida State, including winning the Anika Award as the game's top female player. Now she's got her sights set on the LPGA Tour. We'll chat coming up.
Welcome back to Golf Today. A reminder that it's a major week on the LPGA Tour. You can catch live first round coverage of the Evian Championship this Thursday, 6 a.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. Maribel Ting, she's in the field this week in France and will be making her professional debut at Florida State University. Maribel had one of the most decorated amateur careers in history. This past season, she ranked first in school history in single season scoring average, earned all ACC honors, and won the Anika Award as the nation's top player in the women's game.
I mean, a phenomenal career. She is making her professional debut, so she is a pro now. She's given up her amateur status. And as Jordan mentioned, winning the Anika Award, such a prestigious award. Five-time winner for the season at Florida State. That is some kind of challenging thing to do as a college player. And she ends her career as the number two amateur on the planet. We are now pleased to be joined by Maribel Ting, who joins us from France, getting ready for her professional debut. Good to see you, Maribel. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished so far. And I know you're looking forward to the moment. How are you mentally and emotionally embracing this opportunity?
It's exciting to be out here this week, especially representing myself, my country, and especially my family. It's been an honor to be here this week, so I'm excited to get this week going.
Maribel, as you talk about family, as you talk about family, I know you're dealing with an important and very deep loss in your family, the loss of your grandfather, who's meant so much to you. Grief, unfortunately, has been a thing you've had to navigate throughout your lifetime. How are you emotionally going into such an important week?
I mean, it's hard. He has been supporting my journey since I was a kid. And, you know, we would have a nine hole every evening and, like, you know, so it's kind of like to be here this week is kind of, I'm excited, but at the same time, you know, getting the phone call that I didn't want to, 2 days ago at the airport wasn't ideal. And, you know, the loss that, you know, I told him, right before I came, I actually visited him, before I came to the Avion, I did tell him while he was still like awake. So, and I said, hey, I'm playing in the Avion as a professional and like, I would like to have you to watch me play that week. But, so it's hard. Like, I don't know. It's kind of like a mixed feeling for me right now, but I think, you know, this is part of my life and, you know, and I just want to do it for him. And, you know, this week is all about him and my dad. And, you know, I lost my dad probably 2.5 years ago. It was hard, but losing three people that, love me and which is all my family members within the 5 years has been hard, but, you know, I'm just excited to get through the week and, you know, play in honor of them.
We appreciate you sharing that. Do you feel like you're playing for more than yourself this week?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm definitely going to play. This week's going to be bigger than myself. It's not about myself anymore. It's just, you know, being able to represent my country, represent Florida State, and definitely represent my family members and my grandfather, my dad, and my grandmother passed away 5 years ago.
Mirabel, as you look at your journey, I know there's been a lot of people important to you in your life that have helped you get through, but on the golf side of things, your Florida State teammate and another star in her own right, Lottie Woad, who's coming off a pretty special week, is also in the field this week in your professional debut there at the Evian Championship, which happens to be a major. You've called her a motivating factor in your golf game. What is another superstar alongside you? What has Lottie meant to you in your journey?
I mean, she's a hard worker. I think I've never seen anyone practice as much that she does. And you know, she's a star, and you know, she motivates me in school. You know, we push each other on and off the golf course. I wouldn't say we were both like competing against each other during tournaments, or you know, we just want to have a good week and, you know, play our best. And then, you know, like the team scoring just gets better, and you know, that's what we are there for. And you know, she has been she motivates me a lot, and she is it's kind of special to see what really the world number one does. So to be able to have her on the same team has been an honor.
Mirabel, your coach, Amy Bond, had an interesting quote in a recent Golf Week article with Beth Ann Nichols. She said, and I'm quoting here, in my 25 years, she, talking about you, is by far the best ball striker I've ever seen. What do you feel like you have elevated in your game this year that has put you in a position to play in this championship and go on to have a great career as a professional?
I think Coach Amy has always been talking about my ball striking, but sometimes, you know, it's just like a player's perspective that I don't really see that. But the reason that I have been playing well recently, it's because of my putting. It dropped quite a bit from the previous season. And, you know, I've been working on putting and, you know, working with a different coach. So that worked out pretty well for me. And, you know, the ball striking wise has always been there since I was young. So, yeah.
Mirabel, such a sublime college career, so decorated in your achievement. You're a cool customer under the brightest of lights. I'm just curious, though, as you get set for your professional debut and ho-hum, it happens to be a major in the Evian Championship, what's the internal dialogue as you ready yourself for such a milestone part of your journey and your golf career?
Um, Oh, that's a hard question. well, definitely it's another milestone. You know, like I was actually thinking of staying as an amateur to achieve the world number one, but I was also thinking that since I have this chance of, you know, going out to achieve another milestones and playing in a major and, you know, be the first to make something special in Malaysia, that would be great for me and, you know, going down the path onto the LPGA Tour.
Well, it's been quite a road from Malaysia to Augusta, where you were in college, to Tallahassee, and now to France, where you're making your professional debut. Thank you for your time. We wish you all the best in your pro debut at the Evian Championship.
Thank you so much.